Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Today's episode is a little different, and it touches on some more sensitive subjects, and not even maybe intentionally, but I have Smith Sharp with me, and we just talk about some things that may not be good for some younger viewers. And so I would just caution on that. Just be aware of it. But I think the discussion was meaningful. I always have. Having him is just great. He's so smart. I learned from him. I think you will too. Welcome back to Life Between Sundays. To live your life, you've got to lose it. And all the losers get a crown. I get down, he lifts me up, I get down. He lifts me up, I get down. Hey, Smith.
Hey, Dean. Good to see you.
Yeah, you're back.
Yes, I am back. Well, I have been here.
Here.
I just haven't been on here.
You haven't been here?
On this.
We've had a bunch of people on, and we've had some good things happening.
Yes.
But yes. I've just been kind of preoccupied with something.
Okay.
And so I wanted to talk to you about it.
Is it something I know anything about?
Yeah,
a pretty narrow.
I think we're going to talk about. You're going to be really smart about it.
And
that's why.
Okay.
I'm talking to you about it.
Okay.
It's a more serious topic.
Yeah.
I like to have fun.
Yeah.
This one doesn't seem as fun.
Okay. Well, we'll do what we can to make it fun.
Yeah, we can.
Yeah.
And you know, it's Life Between Sundays, and we're trying to help people navigate their regular life.
Right. Okay. So this is going to be something about regular life.
It's about regular life.
Okay.
It's about how humans treat each other.
Okay. That could go in some different directions there.
In the negative.
Okay. That's narrowing it down.
Yeah, and so where my mind went is the last couple weeks of July, there were some murders in our area, and one of them happened to be somebody I knew that I went to high school with, and she was sweet and kind.
So somebody that you knew.
Yeah,
you went to high school in Hickory.
Yeah, I went to high school in Hickory, and
You went to high school with in Hickory was murdered.
Yeah, and out of respect for her family, I'm not gonna say who she is, but she was beautiful and kind and sweet.
I don't know that I have known, been friends or something. I don't think I've known it. I mean, I've known people who've died, people who've gotten sick and died, but I don't think I've known anyone personally that's gotten murdered. I bet that does kind of do a little something to you.
And it does. And I think we're desensitized to most police blotter type of things. We're like, oh, that was bad.
Yeah.
Or that was, when in this case, it played out over a few days and we were hopeful because I knew it was her. And then she was just mistreated. And well, she was killed, but
right.
she was pulled out of her house and just treated. I don't know how she was mistreated, but she had to be scared.
You mean during the event?
Yeah. She had to be really scared.
Yeah.
And so it just made me think, and I did some investigation, and the podcast is not about people being killed. So I don't want to give people the wrong impression and have them run away from the podcast right now.
But yeah.
It made me start to think about how people treat each other as humans.
Uh-huh.
And also just kind of looking back in history, and that's, you're really good. Your historical perspective on things is really good. But I want to give you a couple facts about it, and then I just want to talk to you about it. When I looked, 70% of the murders that happen in the United States are people that know each other. And I would not have thought that. I would have thought, when I think about murder, I think of a drug deal. I think of somebody robbing a bank or breaking into my house. And
now, when you say know each other, do you mean like know each other as, I mean, like a lot of people know like a famous person.
They're in a relationship.
They're in a relationship.
Okay. They worked together. They were friends. Okay. They were married.
Okay.
They were
Neighbors.
Neighbors, your mother, your father. And that's 70%. And so it made me think, one time those people were in a good relationship, most likely.
Yeah.
Like they valued each other.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And then
70%.
Not only did they not value each other.
Right.
One of them decided the other one didn't need to be here.
Yeah.
Let me stop there. What does that tell you about how we are as people?
It tells me that the Bible starts off where it should start off. And by that, I mean, Cain and Abel, they knew each other, right? I mean, there's your first murder, and it's at the very beginning, and it's over something that isn't all that important. I think the Lord, in using scripture like that, starts off everything is good, and he makes everything, right? All that, Genesis 1, Genesis 2, then you get into Genesis 3, and then things are going south, and it's death, it's murder, and that we need to know that without what comes after that, that's our condition. And it doesn't have to be something, we can justify things. We can justify things in our own head, and you let something start spinning around there for any length of time, and the devil starts taking it south, then you can kill somebody and feel like you're right in doing it.
Well, you've said something many times. And I want to say, this is who we are.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about other people. This is who we are. Like we have this capability inside of us. It's easy for us to say, I'm sinful.
Right.
It's another thing to say, I'm a liar.
Right.
And really call out who we are. So for one, if you're listening right now, I want you to run. We should be running our lives through this filter. I want people to listen to what we're talking about, not in terms of, well, these other people are doing these things. It's like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Where do I fit?
You know, it's hard to see myself in the condition that you're talking about. And when I'm trying to get in touch with my own sinfulness, and which is a good thing to do, you want to be able to repent of things. One of the things that plagues me, that is really like, that really kind of, is this. I think it would have been unavoidable. Me being me, it would have been unavoidable for me to not have been a great Nazi.
Tell me what you mean by that.
I mean, I look and I put myself, like when I put myself in Germany, I put myself there in the 30s, right? Or in the 20s, or all when the Nazi whole thing was going up, and all the patriotism and all the flags and all the you owe us something,
propaganda.
The propaganda, the unity of it, just the cause, whatever. All that would just glow inside. I mean, and it kills, like I'm so preoccupied. I mean, I watch it. I study that thing because I'm trying to figure out how I could avoid being a good, not just a Nazi, but like a really, like you're 10 years old marching around, can't wait to get my brown shirt and my, you know, so that I can be, you know, because that's the way they started off. They were the brown shirts in the SA. But like, I don't see my off-ramp. I don't see anywhere in there where I somehow don't become a really good Nazi.
But you love people. Like, you love people, and you love all people. Right? So, you know, but in history, you not only have the Holocaust, you have slavery, where everyone's minimized that's of a certain color.
Right.
Or in the Holocaust, where everybody's minimized, it's a certain group of people, or in Rwanda, all of those things. So what we're talking about happens individually, and it happens systemically.
So what's your question? Are you asking a question?
No,
or are
I'm
you
just
making
saying
a comment
to you,
about...
I'm
going back to what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Tell me how I don't become a great Nazi.
Well, I don't think I become a Nazi, but I don't know. I mean, you know more about it than I do.
I mean, if you're in Germany and you're in the 30s and 40s, you don't think you're a Nazi.
I don't know. I don't ever think about that. That's such an interesting way to look at it. I appreciate the transparency.
Like, how could I get out of it?
Yeah.
I mean, your country's after World War I, it's impoverished. You feel like you've been done wrong and cheated out of it and made to, you know, you're the one that gets punished for it. And then all of a sudden, here comes this person, and they're telling you who's to blame for this and how you're really not supposed to be here. I'd be like, yeah, that's right.
Okay, now I see your point, because it works in a different filter for me, okay? I do work in Haiti, and the gangs there get a very bad rap, and rightly so. they're gangs.
Yes.
And they kill people. And they rob, and they steal, and they're a pariah on the culture. But I've seen inside of that. And they have nothing. And they have no hope. And they have no job, and they have no food, and they have no water, and they have no shelter. And so they're on the asphalt full time. And so when I look at that, I say, I have to be very careful to be critical of that, because I'm not in that situation. And if you put me on the asphalt in that scenario with my wife and my three kids, I would probably rob somebody in 3 days.
To get some water.
Just to get some water. And then once I figured out I could just rob somebody to get water, I would just probably rob somebody twice a day. So is that what you mean when you talk about yourself in Germany? Is it that kind of...
Yeah, it's that kind of thing. It's like, I want to blame the Nazis for the Holocaust. And they are to be blamed. I mean, in all fairness, and justice should be brought and all this kind of, and I cannot imagine how anyone would take any pride in somehow being participating in the concentration camps. Like, how could human beings do that to other human beings? I can't imagine. And then I'm like, okay, if I'm brought up in that culture, if I'm a part of that, where's my off-ramp? The only way I don't become a Nazi is, and this is even tricky, because they blur the Nazi-ism with Christianity. Because I was going to say, the only way I don't become a Nazi is if I get this off-ramp that is Jesus. But when you're in that environment, the off-ramp that is Jesus is also being a Nazi.
Well, the other thing too that we fail to probably appreciate is the propaganda of the time. The Germans would bomb someone.
Oh, and then say it was their fault.
And then say,
oh yeah, they attacked.
Poland bombed us.
Absolutely.
And so you would look at it and say
Poland
bombed us. So we've got to do it.
Oh yeah. And you're willing. And the deeper you go, the more willing you are to believe things that are completely insane.
So let me twist
with human beings, you know, I'm not afraid of monsters.
Yeah.
Like I'm not afraid of the dark. You know, the dark's not going to do anything. I'm pretty sure monsters aren't going to get me. You know, they're not going to come out. A human being, a person.
Yeah.
That's a different story.
And as you were talking, I want to bring it down to us for a second. You were bringing it down to you, but this concept of gangs in Haiti and the Holocaust seem 30,000 foot. But you know, when we do the things that we do, we're justified. Just like
right.
They would say they were justified.
Right.
Okay, so right. When somebody does something to me, I'm perplexed at how they could ever think that that was appropriate. But when I do it, I'm like, well, it's obvious that I'm acting this way because of these four reasons.
Right. It okay? just, yeah, it our is, team.
Yeah.
If the Democrats do it.
Yeah, it's horrific.
It's horrific. Republicans do it, then.
Yeah.
Of course we should have done that.
And the reality of it is, neither of them can be trusted.
There we go. Yep.
The Bible.
Yeah, Jesus is the truth. That's it.
The Bible gave 10 commandments.
Yeah.
And we like some of them. We, you know, of course, I'll have no other gods, right? That's the one we stand behind, right? Even though we have them. But the Ten Commandments also go into do not murder, do not steal,
yeah.
Do not covet.
Like covet.
Do not Ooh. Bear false witness.
Yeah.
Which I'm not 100% sure that people would know. If you're like, do you know what bearing false witness is? They would be like, no, but it's bad. And that means you're lying about someone else.
Yeah. Yes.
You're lying about someone else. In Matthew 5, anger at a brother.
Yeah.
Contempt.
Yes.
Calling someone worthless.
Yes.
Is the same sin.
Same.
Or 1 John 3:15, anyone who hates
Yeah.
a brother or a sister is a murderer, is what the Bible says.
Yeah.
And I want to ask everyone that's listening, have you ever thought or said that that person's dead to me?
Hmm.
Which is just a common term we would use to say they're worthless.
Right.
Yeah. They have done XYZ to me.
Yeah.
And they're dead to me.
Right. Write them off.
Now, we would view that so different because we're justified.
Uh-huh.
And that's how we get from there to the Holocaust. That's where that starts, and that's where that ends.
That's a seed. Yeah. That's right. It goes from they're dead to me to they're dead.
Right.
They're just dead.
They're just dead. There's mental illness. There's, you know, people go into schools and they don't know those people and they don't know their children and they commit a heinous crime. Right.
Right.
So there's the whole spectrum of that happening. But mostly I'm talking about us as humans and how we treat each other. You said, maybe last night, we had a prayer service. And I knew I was going to use it today, but you said it last night. We have another phrase we use, and that is, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me.
Yeah.
And I would say in my own life, nothing has hurt me worse than words. Like when I broke a bone, they healed. And I was doing something. I was having fun. And I broke a bone, right? And it healed in 6 weeks.
Yeah. I had somebody, I mean, earlier today, you just like, stuck. And it was so unnecessary.
A proverbial dagger.
Dagger. I mean, just dagger. Oh my gosh, it's amazing. Yeah. No, no. And, I mean, you know, I'm still trying. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to take that thought captive. Just what we were even talking about last night. Take that thought captive and make it obedient to Christ so I don't end up starting to go down the wrong road.
Yeah, if somebody's listening right now and they've been hurt by words, because I'll tell you, I mean, I have such a bad memory in my life in general, but I have such a hard time shaking what people have said to me.
Yeah. You know, there is a reason for that. I mean, there's a reason. And we should just listen to the Bible. That, you know, there's life and death in the power of the tongue. There's life and death. I mean, the word, Jesus is referred to as the word. I mean, words have incredible power. God spoke the whole universe into existence. Heaven and earth and the trees and it's language is incredibly important. Just like I was saying last night the baseball coach that I have and had when I was a little kid, and he called his wife Lard, you know, and wanted us to call her Lard. And I was like, what? Even as a kid, I knew that is not right. You know, that is not the right thing. And it just I'm thinking, am I going to do this?
You know, when he taught you in a reverse way, he taught you such a great lesson on how to be a horrible leader. I mean, just he showed you the worst in people. I remember one time I was in a small group about being a father.
Uh-huh.
And what was interesting is it was telling me words to use that I wasn't using that were good. And it said, sometime today with each of your kids, tell them they're smart.
Yes.
And that you're proud of them and you love them.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, well, I say that all the time, but you say it nuanced or you say it in different ways. And to be very intentional. And I did that with each of my kids. It was like they were quiet on the other. I was probably at town.
What are you doing? You know,
what did I do wrong? I'm like, no, really. And I was, they were really smart.
Yeah.
I was really proud
right.
of them. And I did really love them.
Yes.
But what those words do when they come in.
Yes.
And what they do to your mind and your soul and your heart is very different when I say to you, you're dumb.
Yes.
And what you're doing is worthless.
Yes.
And you're dead to me.
Yeah.
Like that's really, so when you before said you were trying to take that thought captive and submit that to Jesus.
Right.
Be specific about how you would do that.
Oh, well, the first thing is it was just running through my head. I mean, cause if somebody says something to you like that, there's the moment it's said, and that's painful. But then it's going back over it and over it and over it and how it just... It disrupts, it disappoints you, it makes you feel, you start thinking about revenge or, you know, so it starts to take on a life. So it doesn't just, it's not just what happened, it's the life that it starts to build around itself.
Well, and so I know you.
Okay.
I know you. And I've known you for a
long
time.
Yes, you do.
And you, people have a perception of you that is not based in knowing you. You have a large church that you serve, and they might, I don't know what they think, okay? But they might think you don't care. They might think that you're a type A person and that you're tough and that you can take it and some of those things are true, but you do care what people think, and you're working really hard to try to take people from here to there. And so what those people that are in that continuum think is of paramount importance, right?
The thing is, all right, here's, so like if somebody that I don't know, if they say, I mean, because, you know, I get stuff on the, you know, all kinds of, on the computer. That's, I mean, like, email.
Are you tight? How big is your keypad?
Well, you know, I don't have the newest equipment. I still have the dial-up.
You should have said, when I do this. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I mean, I get somebody I don't know, and they zing, and they make these comments about, you know, whatever I said, or whether I have any value or whatever. When you love somebody and you serve somebody and you go to have this exchange and all your walls are down, you're protecting those outsiders, you know, you got these walls up and they hit the wall, you know, and it doesn't get to your heart. But when you lower your walls down and they can fire that thing right on the top of it, yeah, that can be painful.
Well, and that's when we're in relationship in our homes and we have friends and we have coworkers.
Yeah.
Those walls a lot of times are down.
A lot of times they're down.
Okay.
Yeah.
So taking that thought captive.
Yes. Taking it
so
captive.
It's one thing when it happens. The other thing is we replay that.
Yes.
And we think through.
That's really the problem. It happening isn't really a problem. Really the problem is when I play it. And then it gets, and then you start defending yourself against it because it's accusing you. So you have to protect yourself from what's going on in your own mind, you know?
All this is happening just with you.
And it's just with you.
Not with your counselor, it's just with
you. And it's happening automatically. It's the natural state of human beings. And so you are running this. So you got to stop running it. That's like this morning, like I was like, all right, hold on a second. Stop. Okay, stop. Okay, let's throw an antidote in there. Person might have been having a bad day. They just, you know, I think a lot of times about what Jesus said. They don't know what they're doing. Forgive them, Lord. They don't know what they're doing. Okay, let's put some of that on there. I mean, so I think taking it captive and putting some medicine around it, you know, and to diminish the poison.
Yeah.
You know, you just diminish the poison that's in it and then hopefully letting it go. And then it starts taking down another road. You got to switch roads. If you keep going down this road over here, the broad road is going to give you more and more and more ammunition, which is going to build the thing up. You gotta throw some water on it. You gotta get control over it, and you gotta take it. That's what the Bible says. I think 2 Timothy 2:26. You gotta take it captive. So you can take it captive. You can grab it. It's in your own mind. It's in your own head. This is what the Lord told Cain to do. This is what the Lord told Cain to do. He said, sin is crouching at the door, and its desire is to devour you. Okay. The Lord is saying, get control of yourself. Get control of your mind.
Yeah, because what let's not talk about what people are doing, what I'm doing.
Okay.
Let's talk about what I'm doing.
Okay.
And you and I both have said, we've said this to each other. Some things are easy to resolve, but some things take 6 months.
Oh.
Some things take 6 months. And the 6 month ones, a lot of what we do is we feed it. We don't just think about it or try to resolve. We do feed it. We're perpetuating it, and because it's in our mind and it's pervasive and it comes back and then we push it off and it comes back. I have a choice in my mind. I'm telling myself something and I have to choose what I'm telling myself. And I would say to myself in my own mind, stop. I would say, you got to stop.
Yeah.
Like in my own mind, or yeah. I might even say it out loud.
Yeah.
You got to stop. Because it would be no different than me saying, hey, Dean, you got to keep thinking about it.
Yeah.
Dean, you got to keep thinking about it. That's what I'm telling myself. So I would say,
no, wait.
Stop.
You don't even tell yourself.
Yeah, it happens.
The thing is, see, that's our default. That's where we start. That's why conversion is conversion. We have to convert out of our natural state. Right? That's why we have to become a new kind of creature, a new creation. We're not good people who happen to do bad things sometimes. We're just people who, if we're not standing on the blacktop trying to figure out where we're going to find water and we'll steal it if we need to. If we're not already there, then it means that our needs are satisfied.
Yeah.
And so we can be kind.
Yeah, and when...
But we're not naturally kind.
And I think one of the things that I'm more aware of is when I do... So some people do things to me that I obviously feel are unjustified. And I do things to people that I feel are justified. I'm doing the same thing to them, and I'm causing in their mind that same roller coaster to happen. And I've got to have an awareness of the situations I'm in and the words that I choose, the punishment that I try to dole out in that situation, because I want complete grace for me because I'm justified, and I want judgment upon you, obviously, because of how bad you are.
Right.
And so I think we have to have an awareness that we're all the same. Situationally, we may be different. You and I may run across each other.
That's a great point. And situationally, we may be different.
Yeah. You may have been really mean to me and I was an angel. Probably not. But the next time, the shoe's on the other foot. And I think one of the things that I've been learning over the last 2 years, and we're talking about how people treat each other, my expectation of you, and therefore my expectation of me, is that I'm not perfect. And I can't expect you to always respond the right way and use the right words with me and everything else. And hopefully, you will feel the same way about me because I'm going to let you down. Mm-hmm. If you expect me to be really smart and comprehend, particularly when we think about marriage, because men and women communicate different, and we think different and whatever, and we're like, how could my wife or my husband think this way? Well, it's just we're humans and we think different ways.
Yeah.
So sorry for the interruption, but just want to drop in a little request to you. If there's anything about the podcast that has been meaningful for you or you like it, you're enjoying it, please take a moment right now. It's probably right below the video you're watching. Like, subscribe, and follow. And that way we know that we're doing something that you're enjoying. Thanks again. For watching the podcast. Now, back to the action. Yeah. And I mean, you've counseled how many couples and people, hundreds if not thousands.
Yeah.
Is this a lot of what you run across? Just this?
Oh, yeah. That's part of the fallen nature. Is that we cannot communicate. It is very hard to communicate with each other. You know, and what's interesting about that is you have a history like the Tower of Babel and then the Lord confuses their communication.
Yeah, their language.
They can't, and I don't know if it means they start speaking different languages, or if they just can't understand using the same language, because we don't understand each other. We're using the same language, right? And we get everything kind of twisted around and turned upside down. And all you got to do is just watch the news, and it's going on. I mean, how deceptive words, it's not actually a lie, but it leads you in the wrong direction.
It's not a lie, but it's not the truth.
Right. It's not the truth. So yeah, I mean, I think it is terrible. I mean, it's hard for human beings to communicate with each other. And that, I think that's why Jesus starts the same. I mean, why we all, everybody has, there's the same recipe. The solution is exactly the same. It starts off with repent. That's where it starts. Every human being who comes to Christ, you start off with this idea that I have to say I'm sorry. I have to acknowledge that the way I live and what I do is not right. And if I can't see that, which is one of the most incredibly difficult things to do now. People don't come to Christ really because they never see or never believe or never think that they've done anything wrong, much less been something wrong. It used to be we would have to convince people that the solution was good or the solution was right, namely Jesus. Now we have to convince people that they even have a problem or that the problem is them.
Yeah. I don't know what's happened to me, but it's becoming less and less difficult for me to figure out how bad I am.
You know, because you're looking. If you don't want to see, if you don't, just like the thing with Simon and the woman that comes to...
Oh, not Garfunkel.
Not Simon Garfunkel. Not okay. Simon Garfunkel. Simon, you know, Luke chapter 7.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not looking for how bad he is. He's looking for what's wrong with Jesus. He's looking to pass judgment on this woman over here. That is of no interest to him. He already knows he's not a sinner. He already knows he's a good person. He doesn't need any information that's going to make him feel bad.
I've said this so many times, and what you're saying makes it more true. The most dangerous person's an unaware person.
Unaware. That's it.
And
now, why is it the most dangerous person?
Well, because they're dumb.
Yeah.
Because
it's because they have no conscience about it.
Yeah. Well,
if you do something dumb, if you're not aware that it's wrong, and you do something thinking it's right, then you're just going to do it again.
Yeah. You can be, I'm going to use the word, not as smart.
Well, stupid's in the Bible.
Yeah, stupid's in the Bible. So I can be stupid.
Yeah. Okay.
Which I am in a lot of areas. There's certain things, like you're really big on history. I like history,
yeah,
but I'm not real smart in it, yeah, right?
So it's not that you're real smart. You just don't care that much about it.
Yeah, it's like, man, it's over. It's over. I'm trying to get through the back half of today, much less worry about what happened in the 60s.
Already happened.
But if I'm aware that I'm not smart in an area, it's okay.
It's okay. Yeah.
But if
it's all right.
If I think I'm a great plumber.
Right. Oh, yes.
And I'm not.
Yes.
That's a big problem.
You're going to have a leaky house.
You're going to have a leaky house. If you're really bad at plumbing, at least start downstairs, right? Right?
Start downstairs and outside.
Outside. But you know, the more I try to be what Jesus wants me to be,
yeah,
the worse I feel about my knowledge of the Bible.
Ah.
I'm just like, God. Like if they knew who I really was and they knew that I don't study, like, then they would be like, you should never, ever be in front of a church, right?
Uh-huh.
That's what they should think. But it's like, somebody has to go, And I have to know where I'm at to get better, right?
Right,
I have
right,
to know
right.
I need to study this part more. Oh, Smith said this. I'm missing that piece. Let me go back and figure that part out, right? I mean, that's where we have to start, is with an awareness of where we are as people.
Well, you know, this is what we've been saying, like that whole journey. I mean, the only way to get right is know where you are and know where you're going and know how to get there. So you need, and that part, knowing where you are, is the hardest part.
It is.
We easily deceive ourselves. That's really the Christian journey.
Yeah, it is.
That is the part where when Jesus says, you have to die to yourself in order for me to live in you.
Yeah, I have to get smaller.
I have to get small. There are things, and you got to get to know yourself in order to know what to die
to.
Yes.
Yeah, the only consistent part of my morning prayer life, the only thing that I always try to make sure that I work in is I say, make me less like me and more like you.
Yeah.
Because
great prayer.
I don't want to be, the last thing I need to be is more like me.
Yeah.
So we don't have a lot of time left, and I want to shift gears.
Yeah.
And it is highly possible
yeah.
that we have to cut the whole thing. So if you're watching right now and at any of these cameras and it stops right here, just know.
I can't wait for this one.
It was
everybody's like, okay, what is this gonna be?
Well, it's a highly charged topic.
Okay.
And I don't know, this is something you and I have never talked about, surprisingly.
Yeah.
Well, man, we wouldn't talk about it, right. Probably. In truth.
Why would we?
We wouldn't. But we're... And it's a serious topic,
okay.
So we have to stop laughing.
All right, I'll stop laughing.
Get very serious.
I am.
So we started this whole conversation about murder.
Yeah.
And I want to talk to you about abortion.
Okay.
I don't want to know what you think. I don't really know what you think. I have a feeling what you think. And
you know what I think.
I know what you think. But I've never asked you what you
okay.
think. And it's such a polarizing topic because there's on earth, there's two sides.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody gets dug in on their side and what the rules should be and exceptions should be. And so I want to ask you a different question.
Okay.
What do you think God thinks about it?
What do I think God thinks about abortion?
Yeah.
That it shouldn't exist.
Why?
That's what I think.
Why?
God thinks about it. This is the reason. This is the reason why. Because God is a God at the essence of what God is life. And the love of life, loving and life producing. And abortion is the death of something. That's what it is. It's the death of something. It's the death of how he brings a human being into life. His design, and you go and destroy that. So everybody should feel the same way about abortion in that sense, that this is precious and incredible and amazing, and like, how in the world? I mean, it's just, okay. So that's the way God's going to feel about it.
But the argument, and
give me the argument.
I'm not trying, and just so you know, I'm not trying to upset anybody by bringing it up.
Yeah.
And the last thing, the reason I said we would cut it all, in case we didn't cut it all, and somebody's still listening, is the last thing I want is to bring trouble your way. And if people get mad.
I bring enough trouble my own way.
I know you care less about that than I would, but I'm not trying to bring trouble your way. But people would say, it's not life. So at some point it is life, and some point it's not life, or that there's reasons that it's necessary. And I would just say in my own experience, well, not in my own experience, but if I could look forward and I could say for my daughter that, you know, rape's involved or she's going to die or something like that, I can't tell you what I would do. I do know that that's 1% of abortions, because I looked it up.
Yeah.
It's 1% is rape or incest, and if you lumped in health of the mother, it's all of that's less than 5%. So the rest of it's just something else.
Convenience. It's not the right time. It's an accident. I didn't want children. I mean, sure. I mean, I think that's right. I mean, I think you have to look. What I stated before was in a world that God desires, that's his perspective on it. All right. So now, but this, we have a world now that's fallen. And so now we have situational. There's a situation. Okay. Part of the problem here is that we're taking no responsibility culturally for how babies get here to start with. No responsibility. And by that, I mean in terms of our sexual practices. I mean, how in the world can we have phones given to children or don't have some sort of regulatory, because this phone belongs to a child under the age of 18. Okay, it can't receive pornographic material. It eliminates that. Just, why are those not available? I mean, why is that not something? See, we create a situation where we normalize the problem, and then we complain because we don't have a solution.
Well, the other thing that I think happens, and I'm aware of this, is that the blame always, and this is how I feel, I don't know, that the blame always goes to the mother of the child. And you know, she didn't get pregnant by herself. She didn't. And a vast number, like 80, 90% are unmarried because the guy left. He went somewhere else. And as a culture, we're saying you had better not do this, or you can do it, whichever side we're saying. But no one's offering a solution to that person who's by themselves or doesn't have a job or doesn't have a place to stay. That's a sad situation.
Yes.
All the way around. And
Are you talking about like just single women coming pregnant and they.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a very sad situation.
It is a sad situation. It is. And I think culturally it was this idea, you know, birth control and all this, then it was going to lower the number of abortions in the country. Exactly the opposite, because it unleashed sexual activity with no responsibility, and abortions have gone through the roof. So, you know, we think we're so smart and we know better than God knows. You know, and we just don't, and it causes a problem. And so here's a girl, she's single. Yeah, this is a bad situation. And now, what we're going to do is we're going to say abortion's a great thing and we should all have it, and it's just health care. It's just health care.
Well, you.
And then we offer that to her kind of guilt-free and all that. And all that does is keep promoting the same activity. Now, I know there's on the rape and the incest and all that. Hey, I mean, you got, that's a whole nother deal. That's a whole nother deal. Somebody perpetrated a crime against someone and they're meant, okay, that's a different deal right there. But I'm talking about, well, you're talking 2 or 3%, maybe.
Yeah,
The vast majority over
95%
here.
95%
or not. Right. You're not talking about that. And so what we end up doing is we argue the margins.
Well, you and I, you do a lot more weddings than I do. Praise the Lord. but I do some. And we do counseling. In a lot of those cases, they're already living together.
Uh-huh.
And you talk about normalizing things.
Yes.
And divorce rates among couples that live together uncommitted. Now, it's slightly different if you get engaged. Well, it's a lot different. If you get engaged and you're like, we got to live together for a month, I wouldn't recommend that because I think it ruins your wedding day.
Mm-hmm.
But if you live together and you're not committed, your divorce rate goes up.
Uh-huh.
And the abortion rate in unmarried women that are living with somebody is much higher than even if they're single and not with somebody.
The abortion rate of women...
25% of unmarried abortions are women living with a man, and they're only 10% of the population. They're very overrepresented.
Yeah.
Because there's not a commitment there.
Right.
And when it happens, the man's gonna leave.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I just...
That's the licensed birth control.
So it kind of going back to the beginning, just how we treat people. I mean, I know we're talking about this in terms of how a pregnant mother treats the unborn baby. We're talking about that. But it's also just how the man treats the relationship.
Yeah.
How we value each other as people, as if we're on one side or the other on a political issue and we demonize somebody rather than trying to help them in the situation.
Yeah.
And so you as a leader in the church, and with input from other people, you know, came up with this idea for Elizabeth's House for just that.
Yeah.
Not a commercial, but just, that idea is giving an answer to that problem.
Right.
Speak to that for a second.
Yeah, it's no good. It's no good to say, hey, listen, abortions are bad, and shame on you. You're already pregnant. I mean, you got to provide a solution. Help provide a solution, right? What is it? Let me go back to what I said before about God wants us to have life and have it more abundantly. He wants a thriving life, and that's where what he's after, and he's trying to shape us by, I mean, these restrictions about our sexuality stuff are not to take anything away from us or whatever. It's to prevent this kind of thing from becoming, because that's how nature works. You have sex, you get pregnant, and you produce babies. That's what it is. If you say, okay, you're already pregnant, all right, well, let us help you keep this child. That's what it is. I mean, you can't do it. You don't have the finances. You don't have the support. You don't have the resource and the know-how, any of that. How in the world are you going to take care? All right. Well, that's the way it started. Actually, that's the way the whole idea started. And then it got bigger from there, and it's become, you know, even a way to keep kids out of the foster care system. Even though the foster care system does, you know, the very best they can, they're overstretched in a lot of cases. And the children end up staying, because of the bureaucratic nature of foster care, they end up staying in foster care much longer than they otherwise would. Like the mother, It's a single mother, but she has to go in. She's having surgery. She's going to be in the hospital for 9 days. Who's going to take care of her children? There's nobody. There's no resource to take care of her children. Where do they go? Foster care. All right. How long does it take? She gets home. She's ready to go in a week, but they're in foster care for 6 months because it's just going to take that long
for
the system and the judiciary, you know, process to happen. And in that time, there's damage done. So Elizabeth's house is really to help alleviate that so that we can just take those children. Mom's in the hospital and she gets out. When she's ready to go, children come back in. We have resources that feed them, clothe them. They have a place to stay. So it's really there's a place for them in terms of housing, but it's a wraparound ministry all the way around.
Yeah, of loving somebody where they're at. Right.
Right.
Giving them
right.
an answer for the question that had no answer.
Yeah, what am I going to do? Here you go.
Yeah.
This is what we're going to do. This is what we can do.
Well, man, I love that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
as we close, you know, it's kind of like how humans treat other humans.
Yes.
As we close, what would be a couple things as we're interacting with strangers, interacting with our husbands and wives, our kids, church people that have differences of opinion?
Yeah.
You know, what are the couple things that we need to remember that keep us from going with a simple interaction to blowing something up or breaking a relationship? What are the things that you think are really important?
Well, one of the things that comes to mind is simply the you know, what Jesus said, you'd love your neighbor as yourself. You know, I mean, that's, if we could do that, that'd solve probably about 95% of the problems on earth. Because I want to eat. I should, you know, everybody's our neighbor. You don't run into anybody who's not your neighbor's anybody that happens. The other thing is, so it's, and I think that's recognized around the world. That's in Christianity, but the Holy Spirit has allowed that to be understood by people who don't even follow Christ. Is you loving your neighbor as yourself is the right thing to do. Now, we don't do it. You know, my neighbor can be in another country. And I think the second part of that, or not so much part of that, but a part of your question, I think, would be something along the lines of, remember that the Lord lifts up the humble and he brings down the proud. And that's a, because if you're humble, you know, you can forgive, you can let things go. You don't have to, pride is so weak in the sense that you can be so easily hurt. You can be so easily offended. You can be so, your ego is so fragile. And the Lord is like, toughen up, man. You know, I mean, come on. Don't be so brittle. Don't be so brittle. Pride, the more pride you have, the more ego you have, the more brittle you are. And somebody can throw a dart in there and you just shatter.
Well, and I'll just say, we talked about it earlier, an awareness. I need to have an awareness of who I really am. You got to be able to raise your hand
yeah.
and say, hey, you know what? In that, my bad.
Right, yes.
Yeah, I wish I had known better, been better, acted better, but I didn't.
Right.
And so, hey, next time I'll try to be better. Would you forgive me? And if we'll just do that, it'll solve so many things.
You're just spot on. I mean, that's just it.
Well, buddy, I tell you what, I'm so happy we got to sit down and talk.
Yeah.
I think you're one of the smartest
you.
People.
I'm not, but I appreciate you saying that.
Well, I love you being
for
on
sure.
here, buddy.
Hey, you are. You really are, and I appreciate you.
Yeah.
Gracious and kind and you just do. You're so self-revealing. I love doing this with you.
We'll cut that part out.
Okay.
All right, buddy. Till next time. This season.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. To live your life, you've got to lose it.